Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this edition of Driven to Business. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield. You know, I may not have the best radio voice of any host on the radio today, but I do have the perfect radio face, and we're proud of that. We have a guest today, a great guest. His name is Heinz Wagoner. Heinz is the owner, the founder of Cross Technologies, which is a private company that manufactures electronic equipment for the satellite and telecommunication industry. Welcome, Heinz.
Thanks, Eddie. Good to be on your program.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Heinz, to start off, both of us, you know, I call myself in the electronic motor drive business. I'm known as a electro nerd among many of my friends, but my electro nerd light shines very dimly next to yours. And tell us about Cross Technologies and what it is that you guys do.
Well, it's kind of a specialty business. The satellite business has little devices that encode a signal, and then they have to take that encoded signal and put it on the correct frequency to transmit to the satellite, and the same thing for the received signal. Once it's transmitted and it comes back at a different frequency, then it has to be the frequency has to be changed to the frequency of the decoder. And so we make the pieces that change those frequencies and then do various other things, such as provide backup switching and splitters for the signals and precision frequency sources and just things that are associated with that whole process of translating the frequencies to the different satellites. And satellites have a various range of signals from over a very broad range, and we make the equipment that translates to almost all the satellites that that are up there.
Heinz, you actually design and manufacture this equipment. You're not just a distributor, correct?
Correct, yes. We design it, we manufacture it almost exclusively in the U.S., so we do buy some parts offshore, but we're a U.S. manufacturer.
Heinz, in this, is a satellite business, is this a growing market? Is it a mature market? Is it an expanding market?
It's a growing market in some ways, and in some ways it's kind of a stable market. There are a fixed number of satellite spaces where you can put these satellites, and those are mostly occupied, and so it's not like somebody's generating, you know, a whole new spectrum of satellite space where you can put a bunch of new satellites, but there are different services that are being added, and satellites have aging situations where they have to have equipment on the ground replaced. And by the way, we make the equipment only that is on the ground. It's not on the satellites. Most of the satellites are what are called geosynchronous, which means they're in an orbit about 22,000 miles away from Earth. And at that orbit, it seems like the satellites are stationary compared to the Earth's rotation. And so that's primarily the market that we sell to.
That's actually astonishing if you think, Heinz, you and I are about the same age, and the time that we grew up is what has happened in that industry. You know, when I was in the Coast Guard and I got out in the early 70s, the Coast Guard at that time actually had to have ships sitting out in the ocean at specified points, and they were out there to basically tell weather forecasters what the weather was in those areas. But now, you know, of course, by having satellites up, that function has gone to satellites where we don't even have to do it anymore. And we never think about that these days, about the fact that how new this technology really is.
It's an amazing amazing world we live in. And I was watching a program on the 101 top gadgets in human history, and the thing that was so astonishing is that most of those were developed within the last 100 years, and probably a good portion of those in the last 20 years. So we're living in a very dynamic technological age that's both exciting and, you know, has some challenges associated with it.
I want to talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. I actually just want to, that's actually a topic I want to discuss with you a little bit, is the way technology is affecting us, both good and bad. Let's talk about cross for a moment, not the technical part, but there's the part about cross technologies that interests me quite a bit, and I think will interest a lot of our listeners. You have a very unique culture there that in some ways is counterintuitive to the ways that a lot of us run a business. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and the way it kind of started, as you know, I spun Cross off from another company that I had started that became a public company. And during that process, I went through a personal sort of crisis where my life kind of had come unraveled. And even though I had attended church all my life, I committed my life to Christ during that time as an adult. And accepting Christ really made a huge difference in my life and in my goals and things of that nature. And part of that resulted in me spinning off Cross Technologies at the because of the kindness of my partner at Wegener. So my whole concept in Cross Technologies was to have a company that was different in many ways. And being a privately held company with no investors, no, as I mentioned, we're debt-free. We have no lines of credit that we have to worry about. And I was able to do a number of things that are radically different. And probably the starting point is the 4-day, 32-hour work week. As you know, in the high-tech community, it's real, real easy to be spending 60, 70, 80 hours and still not supposedly getting your job done. And as in my case, that created a workaholic, alcoholic in my life that I became. And so as a shocking contrast to that, I wanted to do a 32-hour work week. And that has a little bit of a story behind it. I don't know to what detail you want to go into that, but it's probably the thing that intrigues people most when I share that as part of a high technology growth.
I found it fascinating when I first heard that you had done that, I am interested in, and I think our listeners will be, in how you arrived at doing that.
Well, it started kind of as a time of prayer, again, trying to find a way to have the company be dramatically different, and this idea of the 4-day work week came to my mind. And so I began a process of trying to find improvements in our efficiency to allow us to take off one Friday a month, and then I was going to, another 6 months, I was going to try to find more efficiency improvements that allowed me to take another Friday. So over a period of 2 years, I'd intended to phase this in. Well, it went fast. It went well the first 6 months, but after that, it kind of bogged down. And so I was kind of praying about this, and I felt like the Lord spoke to my heart, and he said it was my idea, God's idea, for the 32-hour work week. It was your idea to phase it in over 2 years. And so I decided from that point on, I was just going to, the next week, we were going to begin taking every Friday off and work 32 hours and not worry about efficiency improvements. And the impact of a 32-hour work week in our company has been just stunning. We get more work done in 32 hours with our size of our company than companies I've worked for that have been, you know, 5-10 times as big. And I think there are both some natural reasons for that, and I also believe there's some supernatural reasons that we things happen in our company that might not normally happen if you don't allow for divine interaction and things that you can't kind of calculate how they happen. So.
Well, it certainly would be a culture driver, I would think, in any company, the idea. And, I wonder how many of us, and I'm not being disdainful of any employees, because I think any of us are the same way. We all waste a lot of time. I talked to several parents that homeschool their kids, and they don't take much time to do it. And I'm always astonished to say, well, how can you do that in that short a period of time? And then they will sit down and iron out from you what the average public school child spends all day doing. Well, a lot of it has nothing to do with school. Mm-hmm. And if you take those things out, then all of a sudden, as you term, the efficiencies of the thing go way up. And I would assume that some of the things that happened there with you by imposing this 32-hour work week, that all of a sudden, it's, you know, Zig Ziglar used to talk about you should work as if tomorrow is the beginning of your vacation, meaning that you're going to get everything done that you've got to get done, and that's when you're most efficient. Is that part of what happened there culture-wise?
Well, you know, that I think the other part of Cross Technologies is that I try to really instill is that I really trust people to do the best job they can do, and I'm satisfied with the effort, with the results of the effort they put in there. And I think most people are very eager to do the best they can and to contribute to the company's success. Without having to be, you know, micromanaged or called to account or, you know, called to the table or whatever you want to call it. And so I never said that this was contingent on certain, you know, goals or objectives. I just said we're going to do it and we're going to be satisfied with the results. And so the people that we have are very self-motivated. They're in a culture where that's considered just normal. And as I mentioned, we have, one 45-minute meeting. We have no goals or as far as sales go or many other things that I can talk about in some detail. And yet we achieve far greater success in those areas than in any company I've ever been in that had very structured goals and procedures and processes.
Well, I would think to do that, you've got to have very good employees. And after the break, I want to talk to you a little bit perhaps about how you recruit, where you find people, and I think the retention of your employees, it almost goes without saying. You're listening to Driven to Business. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We are streaming live over biz1190.com, and a podcast of today's program will be on eddiemayfield.com. We're talking with Heinz Wegener. Heinz is the founder and owner of Cross Technologies, a satellite communications equipment company. Heinz, right before the break, we were talking about the unique culture that you have put in place there. I guess to the surprise, at least of some folks, I would think, evidently not you, but to the surprise of some of us, I would think, actually resulted in higher efficiencies and so forth with the culture there, with a 32-hour work week, the 4-day week, with the no performance reviews, things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
I am struck. You obviously have got first-rate people employed there. Do you have any special tricks for recruiting the rest of us don't know? Or
well, that's a I told somebody if I could figure out exactly how we do what we do, I'd write a book, but it would be a very, very short book. And because, as you know, I'm a big believer in divine intervention, both dramatically, specifically, and just kind of as an undertow of what we do. And so I really do believe, in fact, I tell our customers that our products are God-ordained and customer-defined in that we get customers that ask us for things that we have no idea would ever be a viable product, and yet because it's in our sweet spot and we try to always treat customers like we wanted to be treated, so if we can help them, then we help them whether we make money on that specific project or not. And often we've found that the products that I would have never thought would have been had any kind of market turn out to be very, very good products for us. And so that's another thing we don't do. We don't do a lot of market research, and we just try to serve our customers. And if we can provide a product for them, we do, and we don't worry about whether we're going to sell one or 1,000. And we don't sell very many in the thousands, but for us, you know, a product that has a life cycle of hundreds of units is a pretty big product for us. So the same thing goes with our staff. Many of the people that work with me have worked with me for 20, 30 years at my previous company, Wegener. And we had one of the guys that was our VP of operations, and his wife, who was the VP of was the materials manager, decided that they were going to retire. And so I was in a dilemma with having this big, you know, important position here that was going to be open. Well, about that same time, the guy that was the vice president of operations at my former company, Wegener, decided to retire. Part of the reason, because of the stress and tension of being in a public company. And just at the same time, and so I called him up and asked him if he might consider joining us. We have a 32-hour work week, low pressure. He said, no, I don't think so. I need my rest. And the next Monday, he called me back and he said, Heinz, I think I can help you.
I've had enough
I'd
rest.
Like to work tomorrow. Pardon?
He said, I've had enough rest.
Yeah, but it was. But again, it was just the perfect timing for a position of huge responsibility in our company, and he's become just another another piece of the puzzle as far as we had growth. He brought some skills to the company that we really needed. So and that's kind of the way, you know, I do have some contacts in the industry, having been in it since really 1972, so it's almost 41 years, I guess.
Wow.
And but I really do rely on, you know, divine intervention, and I believe that's a powerful force in running a company, whether it's a public company or whether it's a private company like Cross.
Well, you're known to many of us that know you in business and otherwise as a very stalwart man of faith in the Lord. And your own story about which we'll talk about in a moment, your own sort of journey, you've alluded to it a little bit already as we did it. Well, not, just reading the outline of your company, you've obviously, when you talk about your company and you talk about other people, and you have it, you just sort of alluded to it a bit here, but you've obviously bought into the idea that a good leader builds on his strengths and then outsources or delegates his weaknesses. And the way you seem to say that in your own humble way is that you tend to tell us how good the people that work for you are. But those people will tell us what a good leader you are. And I know that's as modest as you are, that's probably a bit uncomfortable for you. But talk to us about that, about building your strength and recognizing your weaknesses and getting people on your team that fill those weak spots.
Well, that's a good and an important, I think, an important philosophy. I believe that often we, during performance appraisals or evaluations or whatever, there's almost a requirement to find weaknesses in people's skill set and then help them correct those weaknesses and become better all around employee. And there's some merit to that, but I think generally people respond to being encouraged with who they are, not who they're not, and then helping them to take that foundation of the areas that they're gifted and skilled in and have passion for, and try to find ways for that to be best used in the jobs required in a company. And and part of the reason I do this stuff, Eddie, is because that's the way I would be motivated best. And you know, there's that old golden rule thing that says, you know, treat others the way you'd want to be treated. And I think that's a formula for success that is way, way more powerful than the quick phrase that we, you know, we give that. And people can sense whether you really mean that or not, whether it's your customers. One of the reasons I'm so negative about sales goals and trying to force people to meet objectives that they really don't have the power to meet is that then reflects on how they talk to customers. And customers will sense whether there's an urgency of them buying what you're selling because of your, you know, urgency to meet some sales objective.
You know, I think all of us have probably had experiences with what I would term a desperate salesperson, and it's very off-putting. It's like it frightens you a bit. You just need to back away because you feel like you're being sort of oversold. You know, Hines, I think the reason a lot of people don't do it the way that you talk about it is just, again, what the Bible talks about a lot is pride. It talks about negatively. Is that we find fault in other people because somehow that makes us feel better, and then we don't want to admit our own weaknesses, so we tend to not hire anyone, if we're not very careful,
absolutely,
that's better than us in any area because we want to be the best.
And to some extent, we're brought up to have those kind of objectives, and there's some value in trying to be excellent, but when it comes at the expense of people, you know, being treated like people. I was thinking the other day of the kind of assembly line mentality that we have sometimes, even in the professional industry, that if we can only get a person to do, you know, three things exactly the same way over and over again without any error, then we're going to have this great company that is successful. The only problem is when Henry Ford developed his assembly lines, he had to bring in 1,000 people to get 100 to stay because the job was so, mind-numbing and so mentally tedious.
I agree with that 100%. Hey, we're up on a hard break here for the news. Stay here. We're talking with Hines Wagner. Don't miss the rest of this. Stick around. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to the second half of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with the founder and owner of Cross Technologies, Hines Wagner. Hines, just before the break, you were talking about the idea of some of us, perhaps in business, of being raised with the idea of an assembly line mentality where our goal as a leader in a business is to just get people to do repetitive work. And you had an interesting statement there about when Ford first put in the assembly line process, he had to hire a lot more people than he needed because a lot of people would not stay at that job.
Yes.
You know, in the high-tech business industries, in both mine in the electronic motor drive business and in yours, one of the problems we have is attracting and keeping top-notch people that are not only technically very good, but that are good with our customers, and you know, the last thing we want to do is demotivate them. I really made some notes on what you said about the idea of performance appraisals can so often be negative, even if the person doing the appraisal doesn't mean them to be, because I think, as you had said earlier, sometimes we just feel like, okay, there's a check on here to check their weaknesses, so I've got to find some and point them out to the person.
Which
of course is oftentimes the wrong way to go. Hey, let's talk a moment about founding and running a large public company. Cross Technologies was not your first rodeo. You were already, at least in the eyes of the world, very successful in this business. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What that was like, starting a company and taking it public?
Sure, and that was another event that was not very carefully planned on my part, and yet became successful. And you know, I really believe, again, without trying to make it sound too spiritual, but I believe God is interested in us, whether we're interested in Him or not. And as I look back on my life, I could see coincidences in my career that knit together to this amazing dream of starting a company that became a public company that I believe was God ordained. And I believe specifically in my case, and this I don't mean this to sound arrogant, but it was specifically to partly to get me to understand the emptiness of achieving all those things. Even at a young age, Wegener Communications became a public company when I was, I think I was 33 years old and had achieved everything in life, and yet there was this tremendous emptiness in my life that, as I mentioned before, a friend invited me to a Bible study where I accepted Jesus as Lord and Savior. And even though I had grown up in a Christian home, my faith was not real or relevant. Until I hit that desperation point and all the things of the world that were supposed to be, you know, fulfilling and create great joy, created great emptiness. And I believe we live in a culture where it's easy to reach that point. And it may not be starting a public company or, you know, whatever, but we have so many opportunities to achieve and succeed by the world's standards that I think very quickly, we'll find that that doesn't provide the fulfillment. But in my case, I'd worked at a big company in the Atlanta area that was in the satellite business, had a tremendous career path, and we grew so fast that the company decided to try to form it and organize it more. As a result of that, I kind of was disillusioned and discouraged. Inadvertently, I don't think the people that I worked for intended it for that, but it just kind of took the wind out of me. And as a result of that, I went to work for Georgia Tech here in Atlanta and did some consulting that ended up in starting a company that I named Wegener because all the other names that I had tried to name the company had been taken, and I needed to incorporate the company for a proposal that I was doing. And so that became Wegener Communications, which today is Wegener Corporation. And that ended up being 177th on the Inc. 500 fastest growing private companies. And then we became a public company in, I believe it was 1987. So that company, again, was... it was amazing because my boss at the former company that I was talking about was a very high-profile person, very successful. And yet when he saw what I was doing, he decided to join me, leave his successful job, and join me in an unheated basement to start Wegener. And it was really his expertise and his skill that got Wegener to be such a fast-growth company.
What made you decide? Was there any one factor that made you decide to go from being a private company to a public company? What was it? Just you needed the financing for the growth you were having? Is that?
Well, I think as soon as you have one partner, it's liquidity is a necessary part of that relationship. And a partner can mean a formal partner as I had, or it can mean, venture capital people that invest money into a business. So I think that's almost a given when you do have, partners and investors in a company. In our case, because we were on the Inc. 177th on the Inc. 500, that made us very attractive, and we happened to know another public company that was not doing well and wanted to kind of not continue that company, but we did what's called a reverse acquisition, where they acquired us, and then we ended up being the majority part of that company, which saved a lot of money as far as an IPO, and that's how we became a public company.
Well, you know, what you have just described there, as you well know, when a lot of people are thinking about starting a business, you have just described what they see as the ultimate success of that business, as you know that.
Mm-hmm.
But and I don't think you disdain the success of it at all, but, you know, you have, in knowing you personally, you have indicated that you were – it didn't – I guess it wasn't as fun as you thought it was going to be once you got to that success, or at least not as fulfilling as you thought it was going to be when you...
Absolutely. And, you know, you get to a point where you're in a position of success and you feel stupid telling people that you're not happy because you have the money, you have the net worth, if you will, to some extent. And actually that drove me to becoming a workaholic and alcoholic. And to try to cope with this success that was so empty, and yet there were parts of working that I did enjoy. It was just that there was something else missing. And I think Pascal or somebody said there's a God-shaped void in our bodies that can only be filled by God. And I believe that's you know, that's true of every human being that's ever lived. And many people today have access to, you know, many ways to divert their pain and their unfulfillment momentarily. But as I found, once I accepted Christ in my life, that that changed everything, and it changed it for forever.
Hines, I have a lot of people coming up to me, and I think in your position, you probably have a lot more of them than I do, asking me what I think about some business idea they have. You know, I'm going to start a business and I'm going to do this and that. And they ask you for your advice on it. And I know that someone in your position gets that a lot more than I do. What kind of questions do you ask when they ask you that? What do you tell them?
Well, that's a good question. I probably don't get that asked as often as you do, but I think passion is such an important part of success, and if people are doing something just for money and fame or whatever else, I think that's a very unsuccessful path to be on. And maybe there are some cases where that does become successful, but you find people that are passionate about a product or an industry or a service, and they feel like they can change something, or they can make a difference, or they can help people, or whatever it is, or just do something that they feel that they enjoy doing. Also, Eddie, I enjoy being, a technologist, if you will. I enjoy designing things and seeing it used in a real application and seeing customers benefit from what we can provide them.
You may have already answered this, I guess, in a way, but I think the downside to people starting a business, and I don't know that these figures are exact, but you do hear all the time about a significant percentage of new businesses being likely to fail in the first couple of years. Again, I've never completely trusted those figures, mm-hmm. but there are indeed a lot of businesses that do fail. In your experience, as a successful business person, is there any common pitfalls that you see people that fail those businesses fall into?
Well, I heard a very successful local entrepreneur here say that entrepreneurs have a defective gene that makes them believe that whatever they do will eventually succeed, even though people tell them it won't. So I think there's some of that, and maybe that's partly pride. It's a difficult thing to start a business and to keep it going. And even in cross technologies, we had some very lean years that I needed to make some changes that I didn't see because I have blind spots. And I think one of the biggest things that keeps us from moving forward is sometimes preconceived ideas of how to do things and not seeing that those need to be tuned a little bit to make them successful.
You know, Hines, I always tell people, there's a poster you may have seen around. It says, ship going down. There's a big, and the motto is, perhaps the purpose of your life is to serve as a warning to others. You know, I apply that to me. I tell people I have made every mistake could be made in business, and so I'm a great example of that. We'll be talking more with Hines Wagoner here in just a moment. You're listening to Driven to Business here on Biz 1190. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield, your unqualified but nonetheless here host, and we are talking today with Hines Wagoner. Hines is the founder and owner of Cross Technologies. By the way, we are streaming live on biz1190.com, and a podcast of today's program will be on eddiemayfield.com. So go there and check us out. Hines, as busy and as successful as you are, one thing I've always admired about you is the amount of time you spend doing things that are not directly related to business, but that help other people. A number of years ago, decades ago, as a matter of fact, you and another gentleman by the name of Larry Schrader, you formed a weekly meeting called the Norcross Fellowship Luncheon. You want to tell us a bit about that?
Sure. As you know, a businessman has been very key in my faith journey, both in inviting me to a Bible study where I accepted Christ, and also to another meeting where, as a businessman, shared his faith and also his challenge with alcohol. That prompted me to come up front for prayer, and I was miraculously delivered of alcohol as a result of that meeting. And primarily, the businessman's testimony, his transparency, prompted me to take that step. And so another businessman's story, especially in his faith journey, has always been of interest to me, and I have a passion to hear men share that. And so after I attended that meeting, I met with Larry Schrader, and we began something called the Norcross Fellowship Luncheon, which started in the Norcross, Georgia area. At that time, Wagoner Communications was located in Technology Park in Norcross, and so that's how we began those meetings. And the purpose is just for a businessman to share his faith, how that works in the marketplace, and just how his life got to the point that it did. And we talked a little bit last time about blind spots. I think blind spots are, a simple way of saying that we don't see things that we need to see that people can't convince us of by pointing directly at it. I've told people one time that if you have a blind spot and somebody points at it, the thickness of that blind spot becomes thicker. And you don't really see it. You see it less than you did before, but if you hear somebody else tell about their life, and you can connect with it, I think it's much easier to then apply that to your own life and make some dramatic changes.
That's a great point. I never thought of exactly those terms before, but you're exactly right. I'll hear someone talk, and immediately I think of they'll be talking about a problem they're having with this or the other, and yeah, if I'm having the same problem, I start thinking about me, as perhaps. And like you said, if someone walked up and pointed it out, I might get defensive about that.
And that's another reason to build relationships with other people that are in your business or your industry that you feel comfortable around, you can, share with on a semi-regular basis. And that was one of the key factors in Cross Technology surviving, actually, because I had kind of a flawed business strategy just wasn't working. And if you had asked me to defend that, I would defend it till we closed the doors. But my friend Paul McGraw, who also had a small company. He and I met once a week. He would not criticize me. He would just ask me, "How's that working for you?" And that sometimes is the best question you can ask of each other, whether it's regarding faith or work, you know, just whatever your position is or whatever your strategy is, how's that working for you? And if you just take the time to reflect on that, it's sometimes it's easy to see, you know, that there's some flaws in the ideas that you had that need to be adjusted, usually just a little bit, to make a huge difference.
You know, we've had, I know at our company, EMA Inc., we've had, because of my blind spots, we've certainly hit some rough spots, and I've had I've learned them both the easy way and the hard way. I've gotten really kicked in the face by the market a few times, and that'll wake you up and teach you to do something. And I have also, in my wiser moments, actually listened to either other employees or in a couple of cases an outside consultant who would point out just an obvious flaw in my reasoning that at least it seemed obvious after it was pointed out, but it didn't seem so obvious at the time. And I think part of wisdom, I believe, is learning to examine yourself a bit, and whether that's through another person's testimony or through a consultant, I think God designed us that way. I think we do a lot better it's one reason to surround yourself by people whose opinion you can in fact trust, people like you.
And again, it goes back to what I believe, that if you encourage people who they are and in their strengths, and help them to think things through without being critical or whatever, I think that can reveal some things that you can't teach somebody necessarily. I mean, hearing good input and good theory is good, but you know, if it's not applied in your unique situation, it cannot have the positive effect that it needs to. I think the other thing too is to have to eliminate fear in a company, so people within your company also have the freedom to speak into your life things that you know they're with you every day. And I try to always encourage our people to make their own decisions, that if I speak to them, it's input, it's not direction. And I think sometimes when we're in leadership, we don't realize that anything we say can be taken as direction, and often make it harder for people to succeed than if we just empower them and let them know that they're responsible and we're going to support them all the way.
And that there's a culture where mistakes are in fact allowed, because everyone's going to make them anyway. And so I read a book a long time ago called, I forgot the title here, sort of Leaders of the Buffalo or something, but it's about this guy who said that a company would be like, that the way you used to hunt buffaloes, they would shoot the leader and a herd would just stand aimlessly around. And his point was, if you're that kind of a leader and you're not there, then your buffaloes are just standing around. And you should be the kind of leader where you empower everyone to be thoughtful and a leader, where when you're not standing there telling them what to do, they're fine and they're not afraid to take any action. Hey, before we quit talking about Norcross Fellowship Luncheon, tell us where that meets for anyone listening, and also perhaps a website where they could find some information about this.
Sure. The website is NFL, stands for Norcross Fellowship Luncheon, but it's NFL, just like the football league, -luncheon.com, NFL-luncheon.com. And it meets at the Golden Corral on Satellite Boulevard behind Gwinnett Mall. And it's open to anybody to attend. We're not an organization. We try to remain denominationally inclusive and politically neutral, and just focus on what Christ has done in the life of a businessman and how he applies that in the marketplace. Our speakers are always businessmen who profess Christ, who are not in full-time ministry and currently employed. So we're trying to get the wisdom of a person engaged in the marketplace, challenged with everything we're challenged with as businessmen, and share how they work through that with their faith as a key component.
And that's at noon on Wednesdays there at the Golden Corral right behind Gwinnett Mall. Hines, we have 1 minute left here. I want to thank you for being here today. You're a fascinating guest, and I think those listening, just hearing about what you've done at Cross, your success, and the fact that you can be an ethical Christian businessman with and live with godly principles and yet have the success that you've had in business. And I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you, Eddie. It's been a pleasure, and to God be the glory.
Well, thank you. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll see you again next week. Check us out on eddiemayfield.com, and we'll see you.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.